Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
Now, I'm going to not say anything else, Jem, because last week I told you one little story and you took the podcast off an entirely different direction from the one that I'd spent. As you know, Jem, I spend a lot of time and effort studying up and researching for every one of these episodes. And so when you throw me off course, I lost it completely because I hadn't done the background research that I always do. By which I mean I hadn't had a chance to ask my mother-in-law about it.
But we need to stop being nice to each other because we're about to have an argument, aren't we?
Oh, it's fight time.
Yes.
I wonder if I can, if this all goes well, you'll get that little ding, ding, ding of the boxing bells going on in the middle of that bit there. Okay, Jem, what are we fighting about?
So, is there an overemphasis on the Tudor era?
No, there isn't. Okay, that is the end of this episode. What do you mean, is there an overemphasis on the Tudor era?
Well, what I mean by that is I've talked about this in passing a number of times, but there are sort of little peaks and troughs in history. If you want books or documentaries or games on something like the Romans, tick. World War II, tick. At the moment, World War I's quite hot, tick. But there are loads and loads of, and then the Tudors I'd absolutely put into that territory again. When you compare it to all the other eras of history, it's kind of weird that it's only about 120 years the Tudors were around. Why do they get this amount of love compared to, say, the Norman kings? Or, of all the Henrys, there are eight Henrys. Henry VIII is clearly the most famous and popular. But there were some other really important Henrys too. Henry V maybe comes in at number two in terms of popularity. But, it just seems to me a little bit arbitrary because this was a dynasty that A, didn't last particularly long. B, this wasn't a great period of our history. For most of this time, we were broke. Queen Elizabeth was reduced to fighting Spain, not by conventional means, but by basically using privateers, i.e. pirates, because we didn't dare actually fight the Spanish in a pitched battle. The Spanish Armada, one of the things that we're really ooh and ah about. Yes, it was an impressive naval achievement, but it's at the same time, it was one of these last rolls of the dice. It shows you how weak England was, because quite frankly, if we didn't do that, we'd probably all be speaking Spanish now. Although we've previously said the English are too lazy to learn another language, but you get what I mean. So I think that, I don't know who gets to pick what's important in history and what's not, but it seems to me on this one, they haven't picked one that's particularly all that. That's my opening salvo. Over to you, Greg.
Okay, well, the first thing I'm going to bring up is the question of the Henrys, because I think that while you're saying the Tudors, I think really we're talking about specific elements within the Tudors. I mean, if you're really going to push, and I think one of your big arguments, or possibly your two big arguing points, are probably going to come down to Henry VIII and Elizabeth I.
They are the giants of that era.
They are the giants, because those are the ones, when we talk about the Tudors, I think Mary gets a little look in. Edward, well, he's just a boy king.
Blink and you miss him, quite frankly.
You miss him. And
Henry VII.
Poor Henry VII, who won a major war to set up the Tudor dynasty, he kind of gets completely forgotten. You went straight in with Henrys. There's all these Henrys, and Henry VIII, obviously, he's the big one. He's the big Tudor one. And then Henry V, yeah, and I quite agree with you, Henry V, he probably comes in second. Then it's probably you're probably going to go a few Henrys down the list before you get anywhere near Henry VII, who we remember Richard III, I think, the guy that Henry VII defeated, and all that bad propaganda, everything that was put out against Richard III, and yes, I know that I was wrong in my book when I said that he didn't have any problems with his back, but that wasn't my fault, they hadn't found the skeleton at that point in time. But even the person he defeated, because he did all that bad press, gets more of a look in, I think, in history than Henry VII does. He's very much just a, oh, And then Henry VII won the War of the Roses, and then we get Henry VIII. And I think when you start saying the Tudors, I think the first things first is we are going to have some very specific battlegrounds on what actually, which bits of the Tudors you think are probably overemphasized as opposed to other elements.
Well, no, I think it's all the Tudors. I mean, yeah, look, me sort of like picking on Edward VI is literally me picking on a kid. But if you want to look at the length of these reigns, I actually worked it out. I sort of did the maths, and King Stephen and Henry VIII ruled for basically about 20 years, and that is the most average. That's the median rule of an English ruler. Edward VI obviously died very young. Mary, she wasn't around for very long either. So really, we've got Henry VII, who, because he came to power through a military coup and war, he spent pretty much his entire reign looking over his shoulder, and quite right too, because everybody kind of was out to get him, and he just deposed the Plantagenets. I've always actually had a problem with the term Plantagenet, because the idea is that basically you go up to Henry I, then Henry I, so we've got three Norman kings in a row, and then Henry I, he says, everyone pick my daughter Matilda, and they didn't. Then we get to King Stephen, the civil war with Matilda, and it's Matilda's son, Henry II, who becomes the next king after that, and he's the first Plantagenet king, because Matilda, obviously, she had to marry into a different family. But really, the whole argument was Henry II was the grandson of Henry I. You know, everybody at the time did not consider him a Plantagenet ruler. They all considered him direct descendant of the Norman kings. So the Plantagenets is another one of these examples where, quite frankly, a lot of people later sort of smashing together a number of different dynasties and pretending they're all one big happy family. And yes, you can draw a line. But, you know, when you get things like War of the Roses, they clearly all didn't exactly feel a lot of brotherly love in that situation. But the basic argument there is the Plantagenets went from basically the 1150s to 1483. So that's 300 years of the same family. And it kind of was, it kind of wasn't. But I'm not even going to use them as an argument. But what cannot be denied is if you're looking at the list of Tudor monarchs, A, it isn't very long, and B, it isn't particularly impressive either. And even if you look at the society of the time, I know the thing you will have to bring up, and yes, it's probably the biggest thing that happened in Tudor era, is the change to Protestantism and the rise of the Church of England. Okay, but I'm going to argue there are other eras under other rulers which were quite frankly bigger and better. But for some reason, these guys capture the imagination. I mean, I remember my youngest son, he was about 3 years old and loved the idea of fat King Henry VIII chopping off his wife's heads, which is pretty grim, but kids love that stuff. But, you know, you don't get the same kind of love for George II or someone like that.
That's true. Now, the first thing I'm going to sort of think about is your thoughts on how exactly it was we end up with the Tudors and why they get this basically cultural status. And I'm going to do this.
Do you know what? That's a really good phrase. Cultural status. I like that. Status.
And I'm going to do this by touching on the superhero movies that we're all, well, I was going to say we're all sick to death of. Maybe it's just me. But the superhero movies that keep coming out again and again and again. And this is kind of a very similar, you know, sort of just to take it out of the sphere we're talking about. We've seen Batman movies. We've seen Spider-Man movies. We've seen them done again and again and again and again and again. And, you know, obviously part of the reason of this on my mind is the recent passing of Adam West, who, you know, fabulous. If I think of Batman, his is still the Batman I think of. And so we come up with this question of why do we have to keep rehashing the same thing with the recent Tom Cruise Mummy film? I haven't seen The Mummy with Tom Cruise, so I'm not going to join in the bandwagon of just slating it for the sake of it. But everyone always asks the same question. Why do we have to keep repeating the same, you know, why all these remakes? Why do we do remakes and sequels? Why can't we come up with fresh ideas? And the answer is that people often come down to is laziness. And I think perhaps partly that is an argument that I was making if I was on your side, is it just laziness? We stick with the Tudors because But I think there's a slightly different side to it as well. It's one of these things where if you make a comment about something, it's much easier to build it on something people already have some vague idea about. It's the reason why you'll hear a lot of British comics making jokes about Christianity in a way that they wouldn't make them about, you know, sort of any other religion. And that's not because it's a safe target. It's because if they make some obscure reference to Judaism or Islam or any of the other religions, chances are, because we are still, you know, whatever the term is, nominally, notionally a Christian country, most people in this country do have at least a basic idea of parts of the Bible. They do have a basic idea of a lot of the stories of Easter and things like that that are big national holidays, and so they work. Same thing, if you're going to make a new film and you want to just stick a superhero in it, why not stick one in we're already invested in? Why not stick an idea that we already know a lot of it? Then you can skip an awful lot. You know, you stick Superman in, you don't have to go into a lot of details. We all know at the end of the day, he's going to fly and he's going to be faster than the speeding bullet. You can save yourself an awful lot of time, a lot of film short. And same thing with the Tudors. I think we've got to look at how they first initially became, you know, sort of this matter of interest to everybody. And once we've done that, we can start to look at, okay, well, after that, I think the reason they then stay relevant, the reason they keep becoming the most important, is once everybody has this basic cultural understanding of the Tudors as opposed to anything else, it's much easier, if I'm going to pitch a new TV series, to go with something we already know. It's much easier to say, oh, let's do the Tudors, let's do a Henry VIII, because I don't have to spend a lot of time establishing what era we're in, I don't have to spend a lot of time going into background and sub, you know. There is already this cultural understanding of a huge amount of what is going on. And I think that is why they sort of stay relevant.
Do you know, I I've been recently listening back to a lot of our podcasts, and I keep saying, oh, I couldn't agree with you more, quite often after the end of a statement of yours. And seeing we're in the middle of an argument, it's tempting to say that again. But I'm going to say that I absolutely agree with. It is that kind of, I think we've talked about this before, it's a brand. Henry VIII is a brand. Now, Henry VIII, the man, I'm pretty sure, would be appalled with how he is remembered. It's like that, you're really? Fat, beard, chopped off heads, wives' heads, you know, founded the Protestant faith in England. No, that's not what I really wanted to be remembered for, but that's what he is remembered for. And, you know, we start perpetuating these myths a little bit. There's the wonderful idea that he had a serious jousting accident. And prior to that, he was a pretty normal guy. It was after that that he seemed to have this very short temper and was far more belligerent. And the theory, but again, this it can only be a theory, is maybe that accident caused some sort of damage to you know, well, I'm not going to say give him brain damage, that'd be a harsh thing to say. But sometimes people have had personality changes after extreme trauma, and maybe that's what happened to him, and it's actually shown in Wolf Hall. But you know, it's a theory, it's an idea. But here's the thing, it's your idea of laziness, I absolutely get it. But if you're going to say, look, what makes the Tudors a good point of reference, is it the fact that they're a good story? Well, actually, I'm going to use another dynasty that lasted about the same amount of time in England, but I'm going to argue had better stories, better battles, and was more important to Britain as we understand it. And that is the Georgian era. You got Georges 1, 2, 3, 4, basically from around about 1714, I seem to remember, to 1830. So it's almost exactly the same amount of time of a ruling dynasty that you had with the Tudors. But what you've got here is you've got the first George. He was German, very German, so German in fact he didn't want to learn English. I always love that. So because of that, you needed to run the country, and they therefore got a minister to be the main liaison between the king and parliament. So he was the main minister or prime minister, and that was Robert Walpole. So actually, it was because of this language barrier, and they all had to speak in French, ironically, to communicate adequately, that you have the concept of the prime ministership. Now, Parliament had been around for a long time, since before the Georgian era, but really in the 1700s, we go from a kind of medieval-style Parliament to a recognisable modern-day Parliament. It's not perfect by any means, but you've also got more effective voting in the 1700s. You've got, under the Georgian era, you got the American Revolution. That was a big thing. You got the Seven Years' War, more on that in a few podcast time, but that was a huge thing in terms of turning Britain from an imperial power to the imperial power. And you've got the Napoleonic Wars, of course, as well. You've got the start of industrialization. You got George II, who was absolutely adored. You got George III. He was the mad one. Bit more complicated than that. He ruled for a colossal amount of time. But he was clearly a very damaged man towards the end of his life. And then you got George IV, who he's just a great story. He was one of the longest regents, waiting for his dad to die for a very, very long time. He got colossally fat. He spent most of the nation's wealth on gambling and women, and he had to marry this woman because that was the only way his dad would give him money out of his gambling debts. So, I mean, if you want a kind of Henry VIII figure, George IV fits up there as well. And then he only ruled for 10 years before he died because he was so overweight and out of shape. So you've got the silly stories there. You've got the important stories there. And I would argue those stories are more important than the ones in the Tudor era. But I take your point that because they didn't catch the popular imagination, they didn't have that cultural status, they're not as well remembered. People have heard of the Georgian era, but they're not quite sure what happened in it. But I would say that if you're going to compare like for like, pound for pound, they got better wars, they got better sociological things. You also, Britain was in rude financial health in those days as well, as opposed to the Tudor era. What do you think to that?
I'm going to say, look, every single era, every single ruler, every single, we can find something in there that we can hold on to, and we can look up and we can hold up and say, this is a good story, that's a good story, all these other things. I think the thing about the Tudors is they, as you say, they established themselves as a brand. They came up with this idea. And I'm going to sort of come up with my theory of where this originated. And this is just me completely talking off the top of my head, just going for a little bit of free thinking here. So I've got to be honest, I've got a horrible feeling that there'll be an incredibly easy way for you to turn this around and make an argument against me with it. But I want to bring you the
I'm
idea.
Waiting.
I'm going to bring up the idea that the, and I'm actually going to go back to my other idea, because the idea that it's the fact that they have this cultural relevance that keeps building and building and building. And if I said to you sort of big three in rulers of Britain, big three, let's say we can go up to people and they can give us something on. You've probably got another one you'll throw into the mix, which will just, completely scupper my point. But if I said to you, Henry VIII, Elizabeth I, Queen Victoria, would you have a challenge?
I think those are three good choices. Yes. And I can't deny that Henry VIII and Elizabeth I are major cultural brands, but that's not the same thing as them being worth our attention.
Well, here's just kind of the thing that occurred to me once you started referencing my last little bit. And it may be entirely irrelevant, but I think it's kind of interesting that it relates to those particular rulers. And I'm going to say the word Gutenberg Press. Now, Gutenberg, famously, the Gutenberg Press is the first, I believe it's the first movable type printing press. And it's often credited with sparking the Renaissance and everything else. The idea that you could very quickly now print out information and distribute information quite easily.
And that's true. And then it was Caxton, William Caxton, who brought it to England.
And Gutenberg invented that in the 1440s. Now, we got that invention shortly before Henry VII comes to power. Now, obviously, it takes any invention a little bit of time to grow legs. And obviously, anything that was, you know, Henry VII went on this campaign against Richard III. And as I've said, we all know quite well how evil Richard III was because of this campaign that Henry VII went on. And I would contend that slightly to their advantage is the fact that this printing press, this new technology, comes out just at the start of the Tudor reign, which means that information can be distributed far more freely. It can get spread much, much further, much, much more easily. And I wonder if that's where we suddenly all start to get this first common basis of knowledge of the ruling dynasty. Because before that, you think, if you're a pauper, even in sort of William the Conqueror's Britain, any other time, your knowledge of who was ruling the country is probably going to be incredibly vague. So you've got the printing press working to an advantage. And the reason I brought up Queen Victoria as well is because once we get to the Victorian era, coming up to 1843, we then get the rotary press. It was during the Victorian era we have another huge leap forward with printing, and we move really into the world of, you know, sort of mass-produced newspapers and things like that in the Victorian era. So I think partly we've got this point that they set themselves up and they handled the way that the word was spread about them. The other thing, of course, is that Henry VIII, one of the things he's famous for was touring around the country. He didn't stay stuck in London. He spent most of his time moving from castle to castle to castle, eating all their food, hunting everything that they had waiting in the, you know, hunting all the animals they had in their ground. But he would move from place to place to place. He'd take his whole court with him around the country. And again,
see, I'm gonna dispute that. I think the itinerant nature of a court, that was not unique to Henry VIII. That's basically how a medieval king lived. You couldn't stay in one place for any amount of time because your court would eat everybody out of house and home, basically, literally. So all of them, you know, be it King John, be it Henry II, whoever, they all did that touring thing. That's what you did, partly because you wanted to keep an eye on the local lords, but also because you were just nibbling away at everybody's food all the time. And, you know, look, I like the printing press idea. It has to be a contributing factor. But I think, you know, it's one of these things. It's more complicated than that. There are lots of things going on. But getting back to the argument, though, Greg, getting back to the nub of it, what I'm saying is, if you look at the achievements of the Tudor era, yes, they're great stories. But as you said, you can get great stories from any era if you start digging around. But if you look at the achievements of the Tudors and compare them to the Georgians, or you know, let's say the early Plantagenets, let's call them that, quite frankly, they didn't do that much. They weren't particularly effective rulers. Most of this era, we were actually seesawing between Catholicism and Protestantism, with people assassinating each other. It was a dangerous, scary, plague-ridden time to live in England. It was definitely not the good old days. And there were other eras of greater stability, stronger leadership, greater success overseas that, you know, I'm sorry, the Tudors have been overemphasized, hyped, if you like, compared to, well, I mean, let's pick the four Georges. You were talking about the printing press. That was absolutely out there by then. But, you know, the achievements of the Georges or the Georgian era were simply greater and more important across the globe than what was happening in the Tudor era, which were good stories and not a lot more than that.
And I think that kind of is what it all boils down to, is the good stories. But just to finish up, because we are rapidly running out of time here, once again, I think one of the big arguments to make is that the Tudors have, you know, there have been plenty of other rulers since the Tudors, and they have all tried to make their mark and spread their name and try and... And yet, rightly or wrongly, because of the quality of their rule, the Tudors are still known to everyone. Now, as I say, that's because of cultural buildings, because we already know about them and we build on that. But there were rulers before them that we knew about as well. It's not just that. I think it's one of those sort of circular arguments. You know, it's a snake eating its own tail. It's one of those very, very complicated things. But I suppose at the end of the day, my argument basically boils around to the Tudors deserve their little place, their little, you know, sort of pedestal of history, as it were, because they have the little pedestal of history. You know, it's like saying, oh, why does this actor get to be in all of these films? I don't like them. Why do they get to be in all these films? And the answer is because they managed to get into all of those films. And I think at the end of the day, successive rulers, they've all seen that people know about the Tudors and stuff like that. And they've all not managed to achieve that same level of fame. Plus, of course, in my last 10 seconds of my argument, I will just say William Shakespeare and the case rests.
Fair enough. Yeah, but during the 1700s, you got loads of philosophy. You've got Adam Smith's On the Wealth of Nations. You've got John Locke. You've got Hobbes. You know, there are loads of important writings. Yes, Shakespeare beats anybody else when it comes to just importance to the English language. But you got one. I've got probably a whole bunch of people. Without Adam Smith, we wouldn't have modern economics. That's kind of important too. There we go. We picked the two most boring topics that you're going to learn at school, kids. You've got Shakespeare and you've got economics. There we go. But these are not very good arguments for people to get that up on. Look, I still think that they are overrated. There is sort of overimportance on them. I absolutely take your point, and using the superhero analogy, it is easier to sell people into a Batman movie because the whole world's heard of Batman than a Black Panther movie, which I've got to say the initial trailers look good, but you know, Black Panther will never hit the same cultural resonance across the globe as Batman, because Batman's got a 50-year head start on Black Panther with movies, video games, yada yada yada. And it's the same thing with the Tudors, in the sense that, yeah, they were already a good story. So if you want that go-to decadent king who liked fighting and chopping wives' heads off, you've already got Henry VIII. We don't need anybody else, even though there were other people like him. Is that fair as a comment?
I think that's fair. And it comes down again to the concept of, you know, me and you, we both like our obscure history. We both like to go for something, you know, obviously we're not doing this podcast just to tell people exactly what they already know. We like to go and find some stories less well known and have a bit of fun with that. And yet, if I'm doing a piece for a show this weekend, one of my big pieces that I've finally brought out to my live shows, I used to only do it in evening shows, is my Battle of Hastings told through interpretive dance. And the reason I have to use the Battle of Hastings to make that comedy piece work is because people know about the Battle of Hastings.
Actually, using a Tudor one of the most crushing victories against Scotland and one of the first major uses of artillery on a battlefield in Britain was the Battle of Flodden, which happened, I'm going to say, in either 1515 or it's round about then. Henry VIII was just about King of England, but actually he wasn't around at the time. It was won by proxy. Nobody remembers the Battle of Flodden. But yes, the Battle of Hastings, Battle of Agincourt, you could do interpretive dance of those two. Everyone's heard of them. Flodden, Hattin, or other sorts of battles, which were hugely important, that just doesn't have the same giggle factor, does it?
And Jim, at that point in time, we are almost entirely out of time. So do you want to squeeze in a quick what-if question?
Okay, yes, quick what-if question, because this was requested and it's to do with the Tudors. So Henry VIII, we keep talking about him. He wasn't the eldest son of Henry VII. There was a guy called Arthur, but he died of the sweating sickness. He was married to Catherine of Aragon, which is why Henry ended up marrying her too. But anyway, point is, but what if King Arthur or Prince Arthur didn't die and become king?
Okay, so Prince Arthur doesn't die. That means he stays married to Catherine. She doesn't have that whole complicated situation of marrying her dead husband's brother. So her life is probably a lot simpler to start with. But more than that, Arthur, well, first things first, he's going to have a lot of trouble when he wants to have a crowning ceremony, because obviously we have the coronation. It usually follows a fairly standard pattern. But if your name is Prince Arthur, then you aren't actually allowed by English law to become king until you have pulled a sword from a stone that stands in a churchyard.
Yeah!
So the first thing that's going to happen is he's got to get someone to put a sword into a stone. And the trouble with that is that then you have to let other people try and draw the sword from the stone first. You can't just have him go up and pull it out because everyone goes, ah, we could all do that. So what you now have to do is you have to come up with a sword that will stay in the stone while everyone else tries, until Arthur goes and pulls it out himself. Now, obviously, Merlin, he's still trapped in a rock or whatever happens at the end of the film. I've slightly forgotten now. Yeah, so he's out of the way, so Merlin can't make this sword in the stone. So what he's going to have to do is he is going to have to get someone who can create a magic trick that will allow the sword to stay in the stone until it is released. And this would kind of be a variant of a magic trick called the light heavy chest, which further down the history, a man called Robert Houdin would actually use to help the French subjugate and control the people of Algiers by showing off their magic. And so I think that trick probably would have had to have been invented in Arthur's time. And then I would have had no difficulty with this argument, Jem, because I would have gone, whoa. There is no David Copperfield. There's no I can't go and see Penn and Teller this weekend if it wasn't for the fact that Prince Arthur had to thoroughly advance the entire movement of magic and magical performance by inventing the light heavy chest several hundred years earlier than it was, just so that he could pull the sword from the stone and become the true King of England. Instead of that, yeah. Henry VIII died, and we got a whole load of rubbish. Okay, I'm done, Jim.
Excellent. All right, well, because I know we're way over time, I've got to quickly say, just back to movies and linking this nicely. King Arthur, of course, the biggest flop of the summer there. Nobody went to see King Arthur, the movie. And also, that was from Greg. Do you remember Greg recommended put in the request for the Imperial Guard one?
Yes, I do.
So this is it's obviously a great name, but that's a quick shout out to Greg. And please, if anybody else has got recommendations for podcasts or what ifs or fast fives, send them in. That's my plug done. You got anything else to say?
No, I think we're rapidly going to wrap up. Do check out condensedhistories.com to find all my tour dates, to find out where you can come and see me over the summer. And do make sure you check out condensedhistories.com/gems to see some nice pictures of me and Jem. Most importantly, if you want to do this podcast a big favour, go to iTunes, Stitcher, whatever app you're actually using to download and listen to this podcast, and just leave a little review for us. Give us 5 stars. Leave a little review. Doesn't matter if it just says, I really enjoyed this podcast, but Jem was completely wrong about the Tudors. That's absolutely fine. Whatever you put down really does boost us up, helps us.
Nobody's going to write that.
People listen.
Okay, all right. Well, goodbye from Jem.
Yes, and everybody, thank you so much to Jem, and goodbye, and take care.